Hey guys, welcome to episode one of the Conversations on Death podcast. My name is Lorena and I'm your host for the Conversations on Death podcast. Death is the one thing we all have in common, yet it's one of the most taboo subjects in our culture. So I invite you, dear deathling, to join my guests and I as we dive deep into everything death related, and in the process, learn about the many lessons death has to teach us, the living. On today's episode, I talk with Dawn Wellen, who is an end-of-life doula. I actually connected with Dawn through a Facebook group that we're both a part of, and I was really touched by her mission and her message, and I thought, this is exactly the kind of first guest I want to have on the podcast, because everything she talks about and touches on are things that I feel really strongly about, and I definitely want to touch on these things and topics when it comes to death and dying. Dawn is an end-of-life doula, also known as a death doula, but she prefers to call it a life doula. In 2014, she founded My Last Gift, offering community end-of-life education, workshops, planning, posthumous services, and mentoring of end-of-life doulas. Dawn is passionate about providing education and pre-planning assistance to ensure individuals understand the options that are available, which allows them to make informed decisions for their future. As Dawn says, planning is not about planning for death, but rather about living right till the end. And I will leave you guys with my conversation with Dawn, and I hope you enjoy it. All right, Dawn. Yay. Thank you so much for being here. If I haven't thanked you already. All right, let's just get started and tell us a little bit about yourself, what brought you to do what you're currently doing, a little bit of your life story.
Okay. Well, it's a pleasure to be here with you today. So thanks for having me. I started this because several years ago, I was actually faced with the thought of my own mortality. My mother-in-law was going through treatment. She had uricular cancer, and I was serving as her advocate. And during that time serving as her advocate, I found out that I had Hodgkin's lymphoma. So the two of us actually shared a room when we had our treatments.
Wow.
And we had conversations about things that nobody wanted to talk to us about. Mm-hmm. The what ifs, death, dying, nobody wanted to discuss that. But the reality was, here the two of us were faced with the thought of our own mortality, and we wanted to have those discussions, the what ifs. So I call those our fearless conversations, because everybody else was so afraid, but we were fearless in confronting those thoughts and ideas and concepts that we needed to explore. So through that process, I realized that people don't like to talk about it. They don't like to face their own mortality. And it seems to be one of the greatest fears that people have, you know, other than public speaking. Yeah. So I work in purchasing and contracting, and I had put together a business model when I was going through my master's program based on this new passion that I had for end of life. So I took what I do and I coupled it with my new passion, and I started doing posthumous gifting for individuals. So people could plan ahead to leave gifts behind for their loved ones after they had passed. Hmm. And through that process, I had been asked to do a conference, and they were going to call it Death X Talks. And the people who were running the conference, I did my research on them, and I discovered they were end of life doulas, which made me look into that world. And I thought that was a really significant area, that there was a void. People, like I said, don't want to talk about it. And because of that, there's that fear. And so I thought, people aren't being served the way that they should at end of life. So that's how I got into the end of life doula role and working with people. So I took training through various different organizations, and every training program, the people who create it come from a different modality. So there's some people that are social workers who create their training program. Some people are hospice nurses. Some people are chaplains. And I had done a lot of research when I created my own organization, and I was already doing workshops and trainings and having parties with people and just celebrating life. So I thought it was a good complement to what I was already doing. Okay. So that is how I got into all of this.
Wow. That's so interesting. That's really fascinating and a precious gift, really, to have someone to talk about your own mortality with, especially if you're on the same boat, even though we all are, right? But it's never like in our face. So before that, did you ever have these kind of conversations with anyone? Were you afraid to speak about death?
Well, in my family, we kind of grew up with knowing that life is full circle. There was never that hiding of death. When I was little, I remember going to see individuals at their wakes and their funerals, and I wasn't scared because my parents didn't make a big deal of it. It was just they had moved on. Their body, which was their vessel, is here, and they're not here anymore. So we were there to honor their body, their life. And so we were exposed in a positive way. And if we ever had any questions, they always talked to us about things. But as I matured and grew, I realized, like I said, that other people around me didn't like to have those conversations. And when you're faced with it yourself, it's a little bit different than if you're experiencing it for somebody else.
Right. Absolutely. So as far as the end of life doula, I'm sure a lot of people listening have no idea what that is. So if you could tell us a little bit about what it is, what they do.
Sure. So many people, when they hear the word doula, they associate it with birthing doulas. Doula comes from the Greek word meaning servant. So birthing doulas provide holistic support for women who are birthing their children. In the same aspect of importance, bringing life into the world, it's just as important to usher life out of the world. So end-of-life doulas provide the holistic support, the emotional, spiritual, physical support for an individual and their family as they're facing end-of-life.
Wow, and it's really beautiful work. So how long have you been doing this kind of work already?
Oh, probably like 6 years now.
Okay.
That I've been doing the end of life work.
And do you find it to be emotionally taxing?
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
So anybody who is a caregiver for people, self-care is really important. So that's a big part of my routine and who I am and what I do, because self-care is part of living your life fully. And doing so is even more important when you're helping individuals face the things that they're going through.
Yeah.
So you do have a little bit of a, you know, emotional pull, and it is a little bit stressful and challenging sometimes because you want the best for the individuals that you're working with. And so self-care is definitely important.
Would you mind sharing some of those self-care tips with our listeners?
So it really, like for everybody, it's different. It depends right. on what you do. So for myself, I love to be outside. I feel that if I put my feet on the ground, it grounds me. My grandfather used to say to me that he felt the closest to God when he was in the garden.
Wow.
And that is kind of how I am. Like I feel more grounded when I'm in nature. I am more observant. I like to go out. I go hiking. I go kayaking. I just sit. We live near a lake, so I'll sit on the water. Yoga, meditation, Reiki, like all of those modalities.
Okay. Beautiful. Yeah, it's different for everybody. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm just wondering if, you know, since you do this particular kind of work, if it was a little different for you, the self-care.
No, I think self-care across the board is very similar for everybody. Like,
right.
in the sense of the things that are available for people to do.
Right.
And I think for some individuals who do this work, it's very important for them to have, I call it like their tribe. They have their individuals that they come together, the same likeness, the same thought processes, and those people come together and they can have that communication and understand each other and what they're going through. So having that as self-care is really important as well.
Right. Absolutely. That makes me wonder, when you told your family and friends that you were, you know, going to start being an end of life doula, were they just freaked out? Like, how do people react to that? Do they understand it?
No, at first they were like, what are you doing? That's so morbid. My grandfather called me Morbid Molly at first. And then by the time that he came around to his own end of life experience, he was like, this was actually one of the greatest gifts that you could have given me, was the fact that you are knowledgeable in what I'm going to be experiencing. So it helped him to feel more calm in his own life processes.
Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah, I didn't even think, I guess, that you could actually be helping your loved ones through it as well. That must be such a gift, but like,
it is.
That's so, oh my gosh, it's difficult, but I mean, you have the gift, so why not use it? It's beautiful.
A lot of people do work with their own family members, and that's how a lot of people come into this work. Mm. Many people have gone through the end of life processes with one of their loved ones, and then they see where there's maybe a gap where something could have done better or something went really beautiful, and they want to be able to share that with other individuals. So that brings them to this type of work. Most people say it's a calling.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. I thought it was interesting when you said he called you morbid. That's something just because when I've told people throughout my life that I'm interested in death and everything, you know, all the aspects, I get called morbid too. And people say these outrageous things. And I find it so interesting. Like, why do you think death is so taboo? Like, why do people that are interested in it get called morbid when really it's like the one thing we all have in common and we should be talking about it?
Right. So death is actually taboo, and it should be. It actually means, taboo means sacred. So end of life is a sacred process, and it's part of our transition through life. So the reason that I think a lot of people are afraid of it is because, like I said, I was exposed to it when I was young. Hundreds of years ago, all of us used to be exposed to end of life. We cared for our loved ones at home. There's a reason that they call house, like in the house, it was called the parlor. That's why they call it a funeral parlor.
Oh, wow.
And that's where they would lay out their loved ones who had passed, and people would come in and they would pay their respects in the parlor of a home. So we used to do that. And 100 years ago, nobody was afraid of it to the degree that we are now, because you were exposed to it. And it was something that is part of that circle, full circle of life and full spectrum. And the more you're exposed to something, the less you fear it. So it's the fear of the unknown, because as over the years, if we progressed with technology and medicine, the end of life care has gone to more of a medical, institutionalized, not as many people dying at home. So we're not exposed to what's natural in the processes that people go through.
Right.
So I think that's where that fear comes from. Fear of the unknown.
So now I'm wondering, what would you say is a way to kind of combat that fear that we all have within us?
I think that conversations and education are the greatest ways that you can actually combat some of that fear. If you have ever heard of, they have these gatherings called death cafes, and
yes,
people come together. And it's a judgment-free place where you can explore all the topics around end of life in a safe place. So if you have the ability, get out to a death cafe. There's all kinds of different games that are out there for people to play. There's Go Wish, there's the Death Deck, there's the Hello Game. There's so many different things that people can use to expose themselves and have conversations. And I think the more that we do that, the less we will be fearful.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Death cafes. I've been to one in person, two online so far with this whole COVID-19 thing. They're all through Zoom now. So yeah, it's interesting. You can just join any cafe anywhere in the world. It's really, really interesting. And I'm actually planning on having someone as a guest to talk about death cafes because most people have no freaking idea what that even is.
I know.
So in terms of education, since you mentioned a way to, you know, kind of just stop this fear of death, I want to kind of move on to some of the things, your projects that you've been working on to educate people on this process. So tell me a little bit about the Dash List. This is actually how I found you and thought it was awesome. Anyway, go on.
So the Dash List comes from my mom always hated the word bucket list when we were growing up. And she would say, it just sounds so horrible, because we would have conversations and we would be like, what's on your bucket list, mom? What do you want to do before you die? And she's like, that sounds horrible. That bucket list? Ew. So I always say that life is full spectrum. I've said it several times if we've been talking. We are all born and we all die. It's what we do in the middle that makes our legacy. So we have on our headstones, our date of birth, our date of death, and the dashes in the middle. So your dash list is putting together the things that you want to do in your lifetime. Are there places that you want to go? Are there experiences that you want to have? Are there goals that you want to achieve? So instead of calling it a bucket list, I call it your dash list, because your life is your dash. That's your lifespan. What are you going to do with it? And how are you going to make it great? So that's where your dash list comes from.
What made you start this?
I started it because I wholeheartedly believe that we should embrace the life that we have and live it to the best of our abilities, savoring the moments, trying to be happy, trying to be compassionate with other individuals, show forgiveness. I think that position drives perspective. And because of the position that I was in before, it's kind of changed my perspective on life. So I don't take things for granted anymore. I don't sweat the small stuff. Mm-hmm. And I want to live my life to the fullest. And because of that, I want to share with other people, you know, different ways that live their life to the fullest and explore some of those options. I want to talk about life with people and things that we can do to, you know, take care of ourselves, self-love, self-care. How do you find happiness? As well as at the same time addressing end of life, because if we address it and we talk about some of the things that we're going to experience with ourselves or with our loved ones, because the reality is that 100% all of us are going to die. That is something that we're all going to experience, and we are all going to be exposed to it at one point or another. So if we have information and knowledge, it will empower us to make informed decisions when our own end of life comes. And I think having those discussions about end of life topics actually frees us to live a much fuller life. So because of that, that's how this kind of came about for me. Because I want people to be able to explore, live life to the fullest. And I don't, because you said earlier, people called you morbid, right? Talking about death.
Right.
People want to talk about life. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is about. It's really about living right up to the end.
Yes.
And exploring possibilities.
Oh, so beautiful. I love it. I love it. So when you speak to someone about coming up with their own list, is there a process you take them through, or is just a regular, you know, think of the things you want to do before you die type of thing?
Well, everybody is unique. So it is really like it's kind of like a bespoke project with everybody. Like it's a unique one of a kind service. So people are going to have different goals. People are going to have different things that they're looking at in their life. So we explore what's important to them. What we start with, what is important to you? What makes you feel like you are living? What would make you the happiest? And we start there. And from there, we go forward. Because it's going to be different for every single person.
Right, right. And then just write it down and...
We write it down, put it together, and then people have things that they can do that they can track. Where are they going? Are they going to be able to accomplish these things? You know, it might be somebody's planning for a trip in the future, but you're setting yourself a goal. And then, you know, okay, if I want to, let's say in 3 years, I'm going to go to this location for a trip. You know, you have 3 years to save, and this is what about it's going to cost. So you can start planning for it.
Right, right. All the little things that you have to do in order to actually achieve it and not just say, oh, I want to do this, but then never implement like a plan, put a plan into action. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So we help people put those plans into action.
Which is what people need, because a lot... That's something so fascinating to me. So many people want to do so many things before they die, but then they don't, I'm always like, well, do you actually want to do it? Because I don't see you working towards it or even attempting it. You know, people just kind of forget. They get,
we get stuck in our daily routines.
Exactly what I was going to say. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, one of the things that I noticed is, so we'll talk about happiness for a quick moment here.
Yeah.
So that's part of what we explore, like what makes you happy. And there's been so many different studies done over time about happiness and material possessions and items. They are not sustainable for our happiness. You know, we might be happy in the moment. We might be have that quick surge of energy because you bought that awesome new pair of shoes.
Right.
But it's not going to be consistent over time. But if you are planning for experiences, that's going to bring you joy throughout your entire lifetime. So planning for that stuff and putting it on your dash list can bring people so much happiness because it's something they can set a goal for. They can make sure that they accomplish it, go savor the moment, make the memories, and then reflect on them.
Right. So do you find, you know, from having looked at different people's dash lists, do you find that it's mostly composed of experiences rather than material things?
For a lot of people, yes.
That's great to hear.
We had, there's this one woman, I had told her to talk to me about what she had on her dash list, and she wanted to ride her motorcycle independently on a long trip. And she actually did, but with the support of her husband, because he didn't want her doing it by herself. he rode in a car behind her, but she did it. She did it, and she was safe because he rode behind her to make sure that, you know, she was safe throughout the trip. And she rode 800 miles on her motorcycle by herself. And that was something that she wanted to do. And she checked it off her list. Wow. But when she talks about it to this day, she beams because it's an experience.
Right. That's badass. I want to do that too. That's so cool. Awesome. So when I was looking into the Dash List project, I saw that you host Dash Parties. Mm-hmm. What are those? They sound fun.
So there's two different kinds of parties that we do. So one of them is more like a workshop that helps people to plan. So I have an organizer where we discuss some of these end of life options and how to put your things in order so that it's not necessarily always planning about end of life, but it's planning, what if there's an emergency? Is somebody going to know where to gather all your information? Right. If there's ever an emergency. So we get together for a couple hours. We talk about the importance, how to put everything together, and you can have food and beverage. And overall, when people get together and you have conversations with food and sometimes cocktails, it goes so much smoother. And then we also offer dash parties where it's the same. It's, you know, food, beverage, but we give people the ability to create their own living wake, I would call it. So people wait till end of life mm-hmm. and when they're dying to celebrate people a lot of times. So when somebody is dead, we gather, we have a celebration, we talk about the memories, the great things that they've done, how they've influenced our life. Well, this is doing so before somebody passes. It's when somebody gets a terminal diagnosis and we have a party. Wow. We get together and we celebrate that person. We do sharing of memories. We do eulogies sometimes. People can write their own obituaries. People contribute and create slideshows.
Wow.
It's really whatever the person that wants to plan the party would like to do. But it's really like a celebration of their life that they're present for, so they can hear
yes.
everything. Because we don't get that when we die.
Right.
We don't get to hear how we've made an impact.
Right. Yes. I've heard of Living Wakes a couple of years ago, and I was like, why don't we do this? It's amazing. Like, we should be doing this. Everyone should be doing this. Maybe we can put that on our dash list because, hello, like, why wouldn't you want to be present to hear what everyone else has to say? And it really gives you a chance to kind of figure out, like, okay, do I have to say sorry to someone before I go, or, you know, have specific conversations?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I mean, I feel like you don't even have to have a terminal illness to have these. Just,
I don't think so.
We should all freaking have it.
Yeah.
Like around Christmas, you know, get your family together and you know, just start having your own living wake, and it can become a tradition. So tell me a little bit about the Unspoken Project.
Oh, so the Unspoken Project to me right now is very important. And it's part of one of the things that we actually do at the dash parties, but considering that right now what our world is experiencing, where people are dying, and because of COVID-19, many individuals are not able to be with their loved ones at end of life. We come together to celebrate people, to share memories, to have community when somebody dies, and have funerals and wakes, and we can't do that. So the Unspoken Words is something that I do at the dash parties, and I thought it would be great to put it out there to the world, because many times there's words that are left unspoken if somebody dies. And sometimes those are the most important words that we actually should have said.
Yes.
And they will forever remain unspoken. And sometimes they will sit so heavy on somebody's heart because they didn't get the opportunity to say what they wanted to say. So the Unspoken Project is anonymous. People can go to the website and they fill out a JOT form, and they put their words that are unspoken to somebody who's passed. It could be anything that they want it to be. And they submit the form, and then we will actually share it anonymously, and it'll go up on our wall. So at the end of the day, we want to take all of these unspoken words that we get, and we're going to have an artist do a project that is going to include all of these unspoken words.
Wow. Beautiful. How many entries are you thinking of getting before you kind of compile them all together?
Well, we just started this, so ideally I would like to run this for at least 6 months before I do anything with it. So as many as I can get in that 6 month time frame mm-hmm. would be fabulous.
That's so beautiful. Do you have any in mind that you've read that kind of stuck with you?
Oh, there's so many of them. There's some heartbreaking ones that I've read, like, oh, somebody put on there, I don't understand why I was never enough for you,
oh.
which totally broke my heart.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was one that the person said something to the effect, I don't know it verbatim, but something to the effect of, I remember we would put 8 tracks in your old Monte Carlo And so now every time I listen to Eric Clapton or Bob Seger, I'm going to think about you all the time. There's been some that people just say, thank you. Some people say, you know, I should have told you I loved you more. They're all unique. They're all personal. They're all everybody's unspoken words, things they wish they could have said.
Yeah. And I think we all have those things, which is very sad. But yeah, I think that's the beauty of a living wake as well.
Yes, yeah. It is. It is. Absolutely.
You get to say them and you get to hear them.
Exactly.
Sorry, I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
No, that's okay. I was just going to say that even at the parties too, there's some people who don't want to say it out loud, but they do want to say it, which is where the unspoken words for the parties came from, because people can do it anonymously. I have physical cards that people fill out for the parties and then they just pin them up. So
okay,
they can be shared, but it's anonymous, but it gets shared.
Okay. Because it's for one specific person.
Yes.
Right. So, Okay. So the person might have an idea as to who it's coming
from.
They
might have an idea. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. Wow. Well, this has been, honestly, the reason I really wanted to interview you. We spoke a little bit before this and I told you, but the whole idea behind this podcast is to kind of have death, the whole topic of death, be more acceptable. Mm-hmm. And both of these projects, the Dash List and the Unspoken Words, I think kind of encompass the whole feel that I'm trying to go for, because it's so important to have these conversations when we are living. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen when we die, which, I mean, this is a topic I'm going to discuss in this podcast because I'm fascinated with like the possibility of life after death, but we really, nobody freaking knows. Yeah. And that's why we have to make it count. You know, we have this one life to make it count. We have to make sure that we are saying the things that we want to say to people when they're here, and we don't regret things. Regret is
absolutely
so, I mean, that's horrible.
That's one of the top regrets for people who die, is they didn't say things that they should have said, or they didn't do the things that they want to do. Right. I want to alleviate those regrets for people.
Right, right. What's the book called? The Five Regrets of the Dying, right? Have you heard of that book before?
I have heard of that book. I have not read it personally.
Yes, but I have not either, but I need to.
Yes. It's actually on my list of books to read.
Right. But yeah, absolutely. That's one of the main regrets. So speak your mind, people. Say it like it is.
Tell people that you care about, how much you care about them, what they mean to you. Don't hold anything back, because a lot of times people think they have forever and you never know what you really have for time. So don't waste that time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Treasure the moment.
Is there anything you do daily to remind you, you know, this could be my last day here, kind of just to ground you and be like, okay, like, let's not think of death as something that's, you know, in the future that may come, you know, 20 years from now, but no, like, this is real and it may happen any moment. So let me live my life to the fullest. Do you have any kind of rituals around that?
So I do have a couple practices, things that I do daily and to other people, they may sound weird, but these are what I do personally.
Yes.
So every day I write down three things that I'm grateful for.
Okay.
I write them in a journal. I write down one thing I love about myself, because self-love is something that so many people struggle with, right?
Yeah.
And we don't treat ourselves as well as we would treat a friend. So I challenge all your listeners to treat themselves as if they would treat their friends.
Yes.
And then I always try to take a moment in the day and really appreciate it and savor whatever's going on. I try to be fully present, sights, smells, sounds, everything, just for a few minutes. Like, we go for a hike in the woods every day. And when I'm out there, we usually like, we'll stop and we'll just listen to everything, smell, sounds, sight, touch sometimes, depending on where we are. And I just do that. And then I'm fully cognizant of the people that are in my life. And I daily let them know what I appreciate about them and that they're important to me.
Wow.
So those are the things that I do.
Yes. And I've heard amazing things about writing three things you're grateful for every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I should start doing that too. I started it for a bit and then I stopped. Ugh, it's just like all over the place. But I ask about, the reason why I asked about this is because I think it's really important to have something, whether it's like something written on your bathroom mirror or, I don't know, just anything to kind of remind you, be in the present moment and mm-hmm. enjoy your life because it may end at any minute. For me, I got a tattoo of a skull on my arm sometime last year, I think it was, or the year before. And I have always wanted one. First of all, I love how skulls look. But I thought this is, you know, the thing that's kind of going to mm-hmm. remind me. But over time, it just becomes another thing on your skin and you forget about it. So it's a process and it's a constant, I don't want to call it a struggle, but in a way it is to remind yourself every day.
When you start to do something, it becomes routine. So 21 days to make a habit, 45 to make a stick.
True.
So if you do it consecutively and consistently, then it does start to become part of your routine.
Yes, you're right. Yes, call me out. Absolutely. I need to go back on it.
And I love skulls, by the way. And one of the reasons I love skulls is because to me, a skull reflects everybody is the same deep down.
Mm.
It doesn't yes. matter who you are, where you come from, you know,
yes.
culturally, race, religion, sex. At the end of the day, we are all human.
Absolutely.
And that's why I love skulls.
Yes. I had a teacher in high school, my Spanish teacher, she would just randomly be like, you know, don't let anyone tell you that you're not worth it or that they're better than you, because we're all going to end up getting eaten by worms at the end of the day. And that's what we all have in common. And I was like, oh, shit, like, that's true. Kind of crazy to think about, but absolutely. And it's one of those things that shocks you. And
yes.
really, yes. Yeah. So anyway, I love that I brought up my Spanish teacher. So before we kind of wrap this up, you know, this is my first episode, so I'm kind of all over the place. But there are two questions that I want to start asking all of the guests that I have on here. And at the same time, this is obviously for the listeners so that they can ask themselves these two questions. So the first question I have for you is, if you were to die tomorrow, how would you like to be remembered?
So if I was to die tomorrow, I would like to be remembered for trying to make a positive change within my community, and just helping people to live more presently.
And you're absolutely doing that. So
I'm trying.
No, you are. Own it. Own it. You absolutely are. Yeah. I mean, and the whole point of that question is really to reflect back and be like, am I actually living how I say I want to be remembered? Because those two things can be totally different, you know?
If I can make a difference in at least one or two individuals in their life, that would make me thrilled.
Well, check, check. Like, you've done that already. So be thrilled, woman. The second question is, if you were to kind of put everything you've learned, all the knowledge you've gained throughout your life, together into a message that you'd like to share with those. This is not necessarily like if you're about to die, but in a way, if, you know, you're in your deathbed and you start thinking about your life, everything you've done, everything you've learned, what is a message that you like to pass on to the rest of the living? Kind of like a life lesson you've learned or many.
It kind of goes back to that tagline I use is my motto for my life, right? And those are the lessons that I've learned is we're all born and we all die. And it's what we do in the middle that's going to make our legacy. And I would say that in creating your legacy, make sure that you have no regrets and that you're living your life to the fullest. And don't sweat the small stuff, because tomorrow is another day. Embrace today.
Right. Yes. Ah, I wish I could hug you right now. But we're just doing this through Skype. So thank you so much. It was awesome. Seriously, really awesome having you on. And thank you for being my guinea pig for my first episode.
Absolutely. I'm thrilled that I was your guinea pig today.
Yay. Awesome. Awesome. All right. And before I forget, how can people find you if they want to get in touch with you and learn more about you?
You can go on the web. I am at itsyourdash.com. I'm also on Instagram. You can find me on itsyourdash and Facebook as well.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, Dawn.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, please make sure to subscribe. And if you'd like, leave a review on iTunes or wherever you consume your podcasts. It really helps spread the message. Also, if you'd like to connect with me, follow me on Instagram @conversationsondeath. And I will talk to you guys soon. Take care.